Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the Driving More show here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Yes, your weekly hour or so of rugby chat, talking about all the hot topics in rugby. And you might notice I've got a Lions jersey on today. And that's because, yes, the Lions will be one of our hot topics today. But before we go through and give you a quick rundown of what we're going to talk about, I'll introduce you to my guest. Yeah, I've got Bauer back again. How are you doing, sir?
Very well, thank you to all our listeners. Hope you had a very Merry Christmas, smashing New Year. And a shout out, you know, thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, and chewing on the fat with what we discuss on a weekly basis. Yeah, hot topic. Speaking of hot, it's pretty hot in my little studio here, about 32 degrees. So if you start seeing me dripping with sweat, just ignore it.
Yes, if he passes out, then we'll just remove his screen from the screen. Don't worry, folks. Yes, the whole kind of host or guest welfare is not high on the agenda here on New Zealand Sport Radio.
kind of like concussion, then, you know, ACC.
So yes, all good. And you're right. Look, folks, one of the fun things about live streaming and podcasting is that noise is all important. Now, sorry, folks, for all the cars that drive past my garage, but one of the things you'll find is that all podcasters and live streamers lock themselves in rooms. They can't put air conditioning on. They can't put any sort of heat fans on. So during winter, they tend to be cold, and during summer, they tend to be hot when they're doing these shows, because it's all about the sound. One of the sayings on YouTube is people will not watch bad sound, but they will watch bad pictures. So there you go. What are we going to be talking about? We're going to talk about the Lions tour because that's under threat as to whether it will go ahead this year. Sorry. Wow. It's 2021, folks. This year to South Africa and a couple of options that have been thrown out there as possible ones. Also, the various French teams have come out and one team already has. Pulled out of Europe and said they'd boycott. They won't be taking part in the rest of their Challenge Cup games, I think it is. But other teams are wanting to pull out or threatening to pull out around the Champions Cup as well. The Western Force have signed a new CEO, so we'll have a quick chat about that. And one of my thoughts the other week was about some concussion and the impact of that on New Zealand rugby due to the ACC. So we'll also have a chat about that one as well. But let's kick off then with just a quick one and a congratulations to Tony Lewis, ex Macos or Tasman Macos CEO. He now has a new role as the CEO of the Western Force. So congratulations, Tony. He's been good enough to come on the show or come on the channel a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be, and I do have a recorded video with him reviewing it 2020 that I have to publish. So I'll try and get that published ASAP. So sorry about that one. Yeah, look, Tony Lewis done a great job down at Tasman Macos, hasn't he?
He has, and you know, lots of experience and lots of, I think, the right type of attitude. And Western Force have done really well to snare a man of his caliber. His skills, his commercial nous, and I think he brings a very strong, reinforcing a strong culture of performance. And I think, yeah, Western Force, they should be very excited about this. And also it goes to show that, you know, they're being very proactive and being progressive and hiring someone of the magnitude of Tony, especially during, you know, this period where pandemic has sort of taken over most people's life. So well done and congratulations to both Tony and the Western Force. Hopefully they don't do overly well on the field, because I'd hate to see eating into some of the New Zealand franchise success. But great signing. Excellent work.
I think it is. And it's a signing for the future, folks. It's not going to make the Western Force good this year, but it's he'll put the building blocks in place off the pitch so that the coach and the players can produce it on the pitch. But that takes time. As we saw with the Mackos, he was there for, I think, 9 years from memory. It could be 7 years. Anyway, 7 years in the end. But so, yes, finishing off with two titles. But it did take 5 years of building to get to those two titles. So you've and obviously reached the final along the way there. But yes, it'll take time to see his impact at the Western Force on the pitch. But a good signing of the Western Force, but also a good move for Tony as he gets to move up the upper level from Minor 10 Cup to a Super Rugby level. So yeah, good move for him and good move for the Western Force, as you say, as well. Where should we go next? As concussion is one of your favourite things, let's we're not going to go into massive depth with concussion, but one of the things that kind of was interesting to me, and I must admit, look, I'm new to New Zealand, relatively speaking, not sure of how all of the legal stuff works. So after the show, I think it was last week or whatever, I had a chat with you, Bo, wasn't it, about whether the ACC protects New Zealand rugby. Now, the current legal position or pieces that are going on are involving the RFU for the English Rugby Union, basically the WRU, the Welsh Rugby Union, and World Rugby. Now, the reason it involves those three is because Wales and England have the same legal setup. Scotland, even though it's the same country, definition is a country, but even if the same passport as Britain and it's part of Britain, they have a separate legal system, and hence that would be a different. Hence, that's why they're probably not involved. Ireland, obviously, is a bit strange. You've got some Ulster under the British law, but then you've got the other three unions and the RFU under Irish law. So that explains why it's those three that have been chosen currently. But one of the things I wondered about was, does the ACC actually protect the New Zealand Rugby Union from being sued here in New Zealand by players?
Yeah, that's certainly one way of looking at it, because by and large, if you look at the ACC Act, which was, I think, back in 2001, it's what you call a no-fault system. So it's predominantly kind of like the Employment Relations Act we have here in New Zealand. Now guys, ladies and gentlemen, I am not a lawyer. I am just telling you simple layman stuff, which I have researched over the years. So because of this whole no-fault system, bringing a claim against a sporting body or employer or whatever industry is pretty much non-existent. That is the understanding I have of the ACC Act. So to a large degree, that is the case. And without saying too much, because I'm currently with my involvement with Safe Tackle Framework, I am in discussions with the ACC, who talk to New Zealand Rugby, and they come up with the rugby safety program. So, for example, every season, all coaches and referees must undergo what they call ACC Rugby Smart program. So, if you don't sit that particular course, you're ineligible to coach as a registered participant, i.e. coach or referee to do with community rugby here in New Zealand. So without sounding too abrasive about it, yeah, there's certainly a feeling of that get out of jail clause in there. But I think it's really up to all parties involved in this, because one thing I see, especially at high performance level, is that players and coaches, players are coached to go into a tackle quite high. And that's actually one of the main reasons we're seeing a lot of these concussions.
Absolutely. And so, but yeah, it's an interesting point that perhaps New Zealand Rugby have perhaps one of the safest, might be the last union standing financially, as all the others get sued. Have to make big payouts for concussion. But yeah, New Zealand Rugby is in a fortunate position due to local law or national law that they're probably safe on the whole. Even though there are some situations where when they've had players and looking after them overseas, they may be under a different jurisdiction. we'll have to wait for that to pan out. There was a really interesting podcast by Blood and Mud Rugby looking at where they talked to a guy who is a lawyer about the legal side of it all. So I do encourage you to go and listen to their one for that.
There are no class action suits here in New Zealand, unlike what is going to happen in England with some of these ex-players.
He goes through and explains all that. That actually, class action suits are only in the US. So the one in the UK, and where a class action suit is an opt-out process where you are considered to be in it, whether you like it or not, unless you actually say you want to be out. Whereas it will be a group suit in the UK where you have to actively opt in. So it's a very different setup. But yes, you're right. There isn't. So class action is the wrong term for what's happening. But so go and have a listen to that on Blood and Mud. But as you say, you just said there isn't that sort of concept here in New Zealand. Now, we'll move on from concussion. Although I do have to question, does Stephen Harris have concussion? Looking at the hat he's wearing. How are you doing, sir?
Very good. Thank you, guys. And a happy new year as well, guys. So I'll just start the new year fresh with a new look.
Stephen Harris, very, very stylistic. Quite the fashionista. I love your hat, mate.
Yeah. And if you read the initials up top, TDM, the driving mall.
Oh, we couldn't quite see that, but fantastic. Thank you for pointing that out. Oh, there we go. TDM, the driving mall on the... As Mr. Harris has got his own little kind of it's more a pie hat than a bucket hat, but I think that's yes, there we go. So for those of you who are listening to the podcast, you can get a view of Stephen's hat by checking out the video on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. You know, just search for New Zealand Sport Radio on there for those. Good evening, Stephen. That's brilliant. I'm kind of losing it, and the fact you managed to get it on over your headphones is pretty impressive, because I must admit the whole cans and hats just don't really kind of work properly. Well done, sir.
Well, it proves the point. My head's not as big as I actually thought it was, so that's got to be a good thing.
Oh dear, very true. Stephen, the old Lions tour, have you been following what's been going on there and the news this week?
Yeah, a lot of talk, but it's not looking quite likely. And of course, the news that's just come out of Great Britain, going into lockdown until around about the middle of February. Well, that probably doesn't help, if you know what I mean, guys. So, man, I guess at the moment we're really driven by what COVID is doing.
Well, what COVID is doing, and also how governments react, because one of the points for people in New Zealand here is to remember that when other countries use the word lockdown, it doesn't necessarily mean that that our version of lockdown is what they're doing. So, for example, schools were going to be open and now they're not going to be open under lockdown, which is all confusing people in the UK. Obviously, schools weren't here. And we also stopped all sport as well. But no, professional sport is apparently exempt. It clearly is a requirement for running a country, as far as the UK is concerned. And so professional sports continues for some reason, obviously behind closed doors. So just because someone says lockdown, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the same version that we had. And I think every country is different in that kind of sense. But yes, that also South Africa obviously is where this new variant that is apparently 70 times or 70% more virulent or easier to catch than other ones. Jack Darby goes, I just hope the Lions tour doesn't get postponed to clash with other internationals. Look, it's one of these things, isn't it? I can't see how you can postpone a Lions tour, because if you do, you basically have to postpone it probably a year, at which point you're only a year out from Rugby World Cup. And the disruption that would cause those countries before the World Cup would be massive. So, Boa, surely it's got to be either go ahead or cancel. Like, they can't be thinking of postponing, can they?
Yeah, look, my take on it is I'm taking a very grim view on it based on what's actually happening, and given, you know, how this pandemic and this new strand or new variant of COVID is causing absolute havoc, I think it's just going to be an absolute write-off. The risk is just far too great. For example, the English cricket team, they're on tour in the subcontinent at the moment, and you know, they've had a couple of players test positive, and that's now jeopardizing the whole tour. So, given the numbers of the traveling tour party with the Lions, all it's going to take is one positive test, and that's just going to throw the whole thing. So, I mean, really, is the risk worth taking? Because, you know, all that planning and all the commercial aspects of it, and of course the public safety, and I think rugby also needs to be responsible. You know, when so many other industries are making the sacrifice. So I think the way I see it, this tour, it's a write off.
Rugby being responsible, seriously, sir. Having seen how they crammed in, or how the RFU or the Gallagher Premiership have crammed in as many games as they could, playing three games a week. That's clearly not responsible. I think that that what they're going to be doing is that from the rugby point of view, they're going to be looking at making this tour go ahead, come what may. The financial side of this is the biggest windfall outside the Rugby World Cup for the home unions, and also for the for South Africa, I think every effort will be made to try and make this go ahead. But I just, how can you? They have said, look, it's not worth doing unless 30,000 fans can travel to South Africa. Under the current situation, how that can happen, unless they manage to go out and buy 30,000 vaccinations for people. And that actually, as part of your Lions tour package, you get vaccinated. I really can't see how this is going to go ahead.
Yeah, Paul, you stole my thunder. I was about to say Lions tours are all about their supporters, isn't it? I mean, to say that's when you think of a Lions tour, you immediately think of that big travelling support that they get. I know we're seeing it in English football, the Gallagher Premiership, what these games, you know, football especially. And rugby and the Gallagher Premiership, all of those codes are built on having that great atmosphere. And I just wonder what it would be like without the travelling fans. I don't know. I'm not so sure, guys. I don't think it's worth it. I don't think you get that full value out of a traditional Lions tour by not having that travelling support there.
Yeah, and I think the box would like it, because they've been dodging every possible opportunity to play rugby. This is right up the alley. So, box, you have to be very careful what you wish for. Looks like you're just going to get it.
Well, yes, there's that. And then, I've seen three alternatives being put out there for this to still go ahead. One of them is for South Africa to tour the UK instead. And actually, the box go to the UK, play against Leinster, Exeter Chiefs, etc., and then play three test matches against the British and Irish Lions. Also, perhaps play British and Irish Lions play a game against Japan. So that the Springboks also play a game against Japan in Brighton. I can't think why that location was chosen in the suggestion. But what do you think about that? About the kind of reverse tour instead.
I saw this suggestion. I think it was Alex Payne, the former news anchor for Sky News. I thought it was quite interesting. And the itinerary he had set out was to avoid the clashes with the Gallagher Premiership as well. So, I mean, it's great to see people are being proactive and being creative and thinking outside the box. But again, you know, we're dealing with rugby administrators. And also, there's a lot of traditional thinking here. So I would seriously cast my doubts whether the Springboks and SARU would actually want to move the tour away. Because, you know, there's a small matter of TV coffers, gate takings.
The TV coppers would be in the same time zone. So you'd still get your same TV rights. The gate takings and some fans have also made point out that the half of the joy of the Lions tour is actually visiting another country and not actually visiting another, not actually having them at home. So one of their so I think some of the fans are anti it, or not necessarily anti it, but yeah, don't see attraction of it in the same way as a tour overseas. But
you have to understand with you know, countries like South Africa, and especially what's happening now with the pandemic, there are serious local political ramifications and situations for government in power. So I think all of that will override any potential tour. So I think the whole consideration of, are we going to have sport, or are we going to have a tour of the magnitude of the Lions, will actually be dependent on how the government in South Africa makes a call on it. And I think the risk is just far too great. And I don't think they'll be risking losing power if they have a botched tour and this pandemic gets out of hand.
It's not too far away, is it, guys? I mean, so I'm just looking at that itinerary myself. You know, that first test would be July 2021. Be going into lockdown for about 6 weeks. What's going to happen after that? Man, it's just hard to know. There's so many variables here, guys. It's good. It's a great idea in theory. But yeah, it's just the unknown.
So another one that's been put out there is for the Lions to tour France. Now, France and the top 14, the Pro 14, and the Gallagher Premiership are playing games in across tournament games in the European Champions Cup and the Heineken European Champions Cup and the European Challenge Cup. So surely there's a possibility there. What are your thoughts on the Lions touring France? How do you see that one, Stephen?
That'll be an interesting one. We know that French rugby is an interesting beast. What sort of teams are you putting together? Are you going to put French selections up against the, obviously you'll have the French team. Would you play three tests against the French and some French selections somewhere in between? Are players, you know, are the owners going to be, are they going to release players? You know, there's a lot of variables there.
There is, but I think there's also an awful lot of money here involved. So I think the French club sides could be, I mean, imagine the Lions having a warm-up game against Racing 92 with Sanchez being the fly half there, or down in, or against, say, Toulouse or La Rochelle, where you went with Aaron Cruden. Was at La Rochelle recently, wasn't he? I can't remember who's quite there at the moment. But look, that would... assuming you're allowed to open your stadium, that would, you'd definitely fill your stadium for that and make some good coins. So I think there's definitely a financial way there that they could persuade the French teams to be doing that.
I was about to say, Paul, the one good thing or upside is that the French top 14 season should be well and truly concluded by then. So that's an upside.
Are you sure? Because it generally goes well into June. It should be done by then, as you say. Or you could always play teams that aren't in the finals by that, because they have 3 weekends of finals at the end of their season. The Lions going to France.
I was about to say, guys, I do know one place where they're playing rugby and getting crowds at the moment.
No. We'll get on to that. Hold your horses. One at a time. What do you?
I was about to press the button. So thank you for bringing that up, Stephen Harris.
Look, it's third on the list. Okay. We're getting there.
What's that other place? New Zealand and where?
So anyway, Bill, what are your thoughts about the Lions playing France? Do you think it's a good idea?
Well, I mean, financially it makes perfect sense, because all the, you know, very wealthy billionaire club owners who base themselves in France, I think it's a no-brainer from a commercial point of view. But, you know, still certain parts of France, the pandemic is raging on. So I'm not so sure whether that's going to be medically and socially possible, i.e. getting crowds in, or crowds of that nature. So again, there's, you know, more or less the same risk as trying to play the games in South Africa. So my opinion is no. I think it's probably a risk is just too great, and that leads us.
Before we go on there, the other point of it is also is that all England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, in theory, assuming the Six Nations happens, will have played France already. So then to do a combined team against France, does it have the same appeal? I'm not sure, but I do think that that it would have been. It is an interesting idea, touring France, definitely.
But at the same time, you know, the Lions Tour is all about the best of the best in the Northern Hemisphere coming and challenging the Southern Hemisphere. So I think let's not lose sight of that. And the whole idea of Lions going to France is not probably going to have the same impact as coming to either play the Box, the All Blacks, or the Wallabies.
Yep. And the other point, actually, as if you look to my list there, and just underneath the thing is the French teams boycott Europe. So we'll just touch on that one before we come over to the idea of perhaps New Zealand or Australia hosting Lions Tour. But one of the French teams has already pulled out of the European competition, citing basically COVID health rules in the UK not being strong enough. The difference basically is that in the UK, they're COVID testing 5 days before games, whereas in France, doing it 3 days before games. And as France say, doing it 3 days before France is a total waste of time. We've just lost Stephen. Whereas doing it 3 days, well, I'm not sure it's that effective. But hey, they say it's more effective, obviously, and it clearly will be than 5 days. So the other French teams are also apparently the French teams sat down around the table with the Europe and UK. UK laughed at them when they said it had to be 3 days. Now they're saying, "Look what you've learnt, boys," as the mess that's now happening in the Gallagher Premiership, losing two games a week for the last 2 weeks. Relations at the moment looking a little bit strained, and I think we need a bit more from them in that one. What about that? Okay, so then, boys, what do you think about the Lions coming to New Zealand or Australia, either to play South Africa or to play the All Blacks? Do you think the government's given exemption for tournaments like the Rugby World, Women's Rugby World Cup, like the Women's Cricket World Cup? Could they give exemption for a Lions tour? Could we bring in a fleet of cruise ships into Auckland Harbour to act as a quarantine centre for 30,000 travelling Lions fans? What do you think?
Wow. I have to say, more. I didn't think of that one. I don't know how to respond about the travelling fans things because, you know, that's going to be a huge challenge logistically and, having gone through lockdowns and some of the sacrifices people in this country have made. So that, I'm not even going to go down there. But what I do have to talk about and what I would love to see is the Lions playing a two-test tour where they play the Wallabies once, the All Blacks once, and play all the local Super Rugby franchises. I think that probably would be more attractive and, you know, create the same sort of hype. And it'll be a worthy enough test. And, the Springboks would be very happy because they, again, like how they missed the conditions this year, they'll probably give that a miss.
Stephen, are you willing to comment about the cruise ship quarantine of 30,000 fans idea? Or do you want to just talk about the potential?
Oh, I think you'll need a lot of booze for starters. Because I don't know if there's a heck of a lot. The problem is they'll all get bored. I mean, to say, that's what are we talking about? Three and a half weeks?
Two weeks quarantining, and then and then you can travel freely around New Zealand.
Okay, that's definitely got possibilities. But see, Jack Darby makes the point. It's once again still a huge risk that they could, somebody could bring COVID back into the community. So there's that as well.
Stephen's got it frozen. Look, I'm only joking with the idea of, look, if They did bring the Lions tour to New Zealand, which I can't see happening, to be honest with you. Fans would not be allowed into the country, let's be honest. An exemption would be provided for the team and for its entourage, of all the coaches and all that kind of stuff. But for fans, no, there wouldn't be an allowance for fans to come into the country.
It'll probably be a bit of an immigration nightmare as well, because you probably have a lot of people who'd go AWOL as well, you know. So that's something you need to consider.
The other way of doing it, how long does it take for a ship to get from the UK to New Zealand? The cruise itself, if you've left on a cruise ship, the cruise could be your 2 weeks quarantine. Look, I'm coming up with all these fantastic ideas now. Sail through the Panama Canal.
Good thinking.
I think there'll be a lot of upset boaties, because if you recall during the lockdown, there were a lot of boaties who went through a longer period offshore, but they were denied entry into New Zealand. So I think
you make a good point. It's an isolation of sorts. Boy, you'd feel for the crew that would be working on that ship with that many Lions supporters. Oh boy, the mind boggles.
But look, we've got all these cruise ships around the world that can't be being used much at the moment. Here's a use for them. But to me, it's a no-brainer. It's a brilliant idea. I mean, I'll be honest. There's a whole bunch of cruise ships have been complaining that they can't come to New Zealand for a while. It's like, look, you can do, but you have to stay here basically and not sail anywhere else. And I've been thinking, you know what? Why a cruise ship doesn't set itself up as a 14-day quarantine thing, give you a quick sail round New Zealand. Okay, you can't get off, but you can go and see the sound. You can go and see these things and go and see the rest of the country while you're at while you have your 14 days, rather than having to be sat in a hotel where you can't see anything. So if I was a cruise company, I'd be saying, look, hey, how about us as a quarantine place, once every 2 weeks, we stop in at Auckland, pick up a crowd, and go around the islands. Anyway. This is me just throwing out business ideas, hey, for free, folks. So feel free to take them and run with them.
It'll certainly be an interesting experience, because I think it was about a week ago I was watching this, it was a 2020 style, 60 minute style doco about the cruise ship industry. And boy, some of the stuff I saw on that, you put a whole bunch of Lion supporters and all that beer, that's not going to be a very good combination. But hey, I'm just putting that out there as well.
There we go. So a couple of ideas there, but the Lions tour is looking very much unlikely. Let's be honest, and in all honesty, I can't see any other options really than it going ahead as it's planned. I can't see any other that the South Africa touring UK is perhaps the only one that is even vaguely feasible, I would suggest. But I think everything else is pretty much off the cards, especially as South Africa have signed up for the Rainbow Cup, which sees South African Super Rugby franchises playing against the Pro 14 teams, which will involve travel backwards and forwards between Europe and South Africa. How they plan for that to go ahead, kicking off in May, or it's April, I think, which way around is it? Anyway, but it's kicking off in April, then, yeah, it's just, I that's another thing I can't see happening either. But we will have to wait and see. As Jack, Nocturnal writes for the point, is that, yeah, COVID is political, and various governments and organizations using it as a bargaining chip. That's not a rabbit hole we're going to go down and discuss, but you're quite right. It's not just simple discussions around what is sort of the best advice about what to do. We've zoomed through the topics I had, guys. That was a bit quicker than I anticipated. Stephen, do you want to just give us a quick story behind your hat and where you got it from, and where people can purchase a TB a TBF hat if they want to?
Actually, the truth be known, it's actually a promotional hat. If I turn it around.
Oh,
of course.
It's the old LMP bucket hat.
Well, I'll be honest. We're open to sponsorship. So if LMP would like to sponsor us, now that I'm in Waihi near Pyro, I could even pop around and take some photos with the bottle. Yeah.
The LMP driving wall's got a ring to it.
Yeah, great juxtaposition. And I think the whole LMP, the logos kind of, you know, complement each other. So, yeah, that's great. It rolls right out of your tongue as well. So,
Cool. Any other things that have been going on, you think, in the rugby world that you'd like to discuss, Spell?
Yeah, well, a couple of weeks back, we had the New Zealand School Sevens, the World School Sevens. The New Zealand Condors won that. It was a great tournament. I think they beat the New Zealand Tongan rep side. Some outstanding rugby was on play, and lots of talent. I think New Zealand Sevens, the Sevens program, and NZRFU High Performance being very proactive in that manner, because keep in mind, most other countries don't have this luxury. Most other countries have actually disbanded their Sevens programs. So NZR, especially focusing on the Sevens, they are doing everything they can to get ready. And in the event there is a Olympic Games, yeah, I think New Zealand will be right in the box seat to take it out. So well done to everyone participating. A number of my good mates were involved in coaching, spread right across the teams. Some very high quality stuff. So if any of you listeners and viewers out there did go and have a look, I'm sure you enjoyed and you know what I'm talking about.
As we've been having a quick chat about sponsorship in the live chat there, I should also point out, folks, that you can support New Zealand Sports Radio by heading over to patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio. Or head over to nzsportradio.com and you can support the channel through that. Stephen, looks like you've been searching and tapping away on some stuff. What have you come across?
Yeah, I just quite an interesting one. A story that I just saw on stuff was just about the Māori Team Cup. 10 years on from the Māori Team Cup competition split, basically this article that was written by a gentleman by the name of Aaron Goyley, who writ this article probably about a week or so back. It just really outlines a little bit in and around the tournament, how it's being played. Maybe if we should have one competition proper, because in his opinion, if you looked at this competition, he actually thought the best team in the competition, and that was based on points, was probably Hawke's Bay. So yeah, it's an interesting one to get your teeth into, maybe a little bit later down the track. But I just want to, after 10 years of this competition, I just want to get Boa's thoughts on it and what you actually think about this competition and where it should be going, Boa.
Well, as I've always maintained, I'm a huge fan of trying to simplify the competition, taking it to the community. Moving away from these larger venues and making it more community-friendly, more family-friendly, and getting more players from within the catchment area playing the game, representing the province. So, sadly, we are not seeing that because, you know, professionalization of the sport and professionalization of the game is starting to see that, you know, players get imported out of other provinces. What is the term they use? Draft picks. So, I'd really like to see the NPC or the Minor 10 become more a semi-professional version of the sport. But somehow I don't think NZR want that. You know, primarily because there are large commercial concerns, and running a Minor 10 campaign takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of money. But I'd like to see some of these games actually taken to smaller venues where there's more community access. And also, if those venues are, you know, obviously they'll name it well ahead in the fixture card. I'd love to see more local club representation in the team, so that will then bring some of the local fans.
I actually like the idea about taking the game to smaller venues. This is an interesting stat that came out of this article. In 10 years, there's been 280 crossover games, and championship teams have won 82 of those games. So it works out to just under 30% of those games have actually been won by championship teams. But I suppose we've also got to remember there are probably times where the Premiership teams probably haven't had their All Blacks available. So there's probably a few little anomalies on the way. Also, you have got some championship over the years. You've had championship teams that have had a good number of Super Rugby players without sort of losing All Blacks to, well, losing fringe All Blacks to All Black, greater All Black squads, etc., etc. So teams like that, teams like Hawke's Bay have done relatively well. We've seen teams like Bay of Plenty do reasonably well, and even the likes of Tasman, when they were down in the Championship division, they transitioned rather well into the Premiership because they actually had a decent sort of squad. I personally like the two-tier idea because it does keep a lot of interest for all the supporters. My only fear, if you went to one competition, you know, can you imagine the 13th team playing the 12th place team? That's pretty much out of the competition. Even if you look at the championship in recent years, you know, there's been teams that have been sitting outside the top four that going into the last round have still been a chance to make the semi-final. So I quite like it. Although, on saying that, if you look at the other end of the scale, you know, there were teams that were already doomed. I think this year we saw a couple of anomalies in the Premiership division where you had the likes of North Harbour on the basis of a loss on the very last day, or loss or win, saw them in the semi-finals, and a loss saw them drop down to the championship. So it was a really good competition, but you know, sometimes results like that are few and far between.
They say just keep him involved. I think just to go back to Bo's point about the semi-professional thing, I mean, it is semi-professional at the moment. You do have a lot of players aren't full-time. And actually, New Zealand Rugby is trying to push it to be an amateur competition. They want it to downgrade it. I think the provinces are pushing back, saying, no, they don't want that. They want to keep it as as it is now. So, I think New Zealand Rugby is starting to see it as an expense that they can't really afford. And I think we're going to see more push from them to make it more amateur. I personally like the way it is at the moment, with where you actually get to see, there is opportunities occasionally see players like Sam Kane turning out for Bay of Plenty. Does it happen on a regular basis? No. But if you had them up against pure amateurs, then I think you've got player welfare issues.
Yeah, and one thing I would suggest is, the two-tier system must stay. That I'm a huge fan of that. One thing NZR can look at doing is get a little bit creative on how to make the competition a little bit more even. So let's say if you're playing a top four side from the Premiership against some of the lower sides in the Championship, maybe they look at capping representative or Super Rugby contracted players against some of the lower teams. Just for the sake of, you know, keeping the competition more open and more competitive, because otherwise, with the injection of professionalization, what we're going to see is the haves versus the have-nots, and the statistics clearly back that up. The last 10 years, over 30% of the games have been won by the top sides from the Championship. So I think there needs to be a little bit of simple creativity, and by doing that, by, you know, keeping the competition competitive, I think we're going to see far more communal engagement and more punters coming to watch these games, purely because we are going to see a lot closer games.
Yeah, I think one of the problems that we have, and you say about people turning up to games, is that if you talk to people in power, they've got a lot of things are, if we were winning, we'd get more people turning up. But at the end of the day, only one team can be the winning team. And you've got to base your crowd numbers off something else other than winning. And that's got to be connection with the community. Now, whether that's through local players or through smaller grounds or however you do it, that's really how it's got to be done, I think.
Paul, I'm with the conclusion that I don't think some unions do enough work to get that sort of engagement, to get the people coming along to the game. I mean, so I think here in Auckland, there's a wonderful opportunity to go to a Waitakere Stadium or a Western Springs, try and involve your clubs, get three or four of your clubs involved. I know there's a lot of tick boxes in and around sort of catering and contractual catering and sponsors and whatnot, but I think you've just got to work that a little bit harder. You're seeing a great push up in Northland with Cam Bell and the Northland Union. He does, you know, Cam does not go to sleep at the wheel. He's basically working. The Northland Union have just signed an agreement with NorthTech, which is a facility, education facility, up in Whangarei, which means they can ensure that a lot of promising places players can, you know, get education up north. And I just think some of the unions have just got to try that little bit harder to get that engagement. My issue, if the game goes amateur, boy, you've just opened the back door to the burglar, which is the NRL, and basically said, man, guys, go in and help yourself, because all your promising young rugby players will be playing over in the NRL. Am I missing something here in New Zealand Rugby Union? If you want to go the amateur way, that's the door you're opening. Or leaving open, beg your pardon.
Yeah, and it's a problem that they've... I remember listening to an interview with Lau Nape, who said, yeah, I mean, he was a rugby player, then got an opportunity to be coming out of school. He could either go professional and play with the Warriors, or he could get an academy contract, or essentially stay amateur, not really getting paid, and play rugby union. It was a no-brainer. Off he goes to the NRL because he's getting paid. Not because he necessarily wanted to go that route, but because financially that was the only way to go. And so, yeah, you're right, Stephen. I think you would lose a lot of players to the NRL from that. Yep.
Well, it's happening anyway. It's happening quite a bit.
In the live chat, some discussion there about saying, yeah, play more provincial rugby and less internationals. That's not the way New Zealand rugby is going. They're looking at 15 games this year, up from the normal 14, which is more than the average 11 that the Northern Hemisphere teams play already. So no, the All Blacks are looking at pushing to have as many test matches as they can fit it, or the New Zealand rugby is anyway. That's a total non-starter there, I'm afraid. I like the two-tier system. You've got to look at how teams like Southland have gone and Northland, for that matter, have both gone on two-year losing streaks in the championship. You just make that worse putting them in a complete competition. I don't think having one competition is the right way to go. But there does need to be more work done on education the public as to what the structure is. I think that's where the problem lies.
I know that. I know, to give you an example, the Blues are working really hard with the three unions. I know Brad Tahara, who's the high performance manager for Northland Rugby Union. He's also going to be a conduit to the Blues as well, in the same way that Daniel Bowden is for Auckland, which is just music to my ears, because it means they can basically, these guys who are the HP, can look at the cattle which they've got and farm them out to a North Harbour or a Northland, so they actually stay in the franchise, stay in those three unions together. It's music to my ears. It's taken so long to happen. This is the sort of stuff that should have really happened when this union first came to be. I mean, to say the number of players, and Boa will agree with me, that that have been lost or not seen in Auckland, ended up playing for the Chiefs, the Highlanders, Hurricanes, etc., etc. Well, now here's an opportunity to have a young promising player and say, hey, listen, I'll use an example. Somebody like Hamden Tuipulotu, a younger brother of Patrick, outstanding talent. But Auckland's got, as we know, they've got some pretty useful props at the moment. And I'd say probably Auckland in their pecking order, they'll probably see him as a starting prop maybe in about 2023. Tell you what, why not give him a couple of years running around for Northland just to further improve his game on the proviso when he's the finished article, we Auckland get him back playing for Auckland. Does that make a bit of sense, guys?
Yeah, totally, totally. I think with the Super Rugby franchises, you know, it's the Blues example is a very good one, and I think it's a very proactive start, even though it's a bit later in the play, that the Blues are in regular conversations with the Northland counties, Manukau and Auckland High Performance Managers, and they in turn then talk to the directors of rugby with the local clubs. And, you know, that's the area that is the model which needs to be mirrored right around the country with all the five Super Rugby franchises. But because the more that happens, it's, you know, you're going to get access to players who you never knew existed, and the talent identifications gets intensified. And of course, the coaches, administrators, players, and also the fans, they understand that there is this program, and the chances of these players or the talent staying within that catchment area just multiplies, you know, tenfold. One of the biggest problems over the last 2 to 3 years, you know, with my involvement in club rugby, is most of some of these very talented players, first given instance, they leave the province because there are a lot of talent scouting, obviously, from provinces outside, and the financial lures.
And we've got to say that some unions are more cash strapped than others, and there is definitely financial laws available at some unions that aren't others. Some unions are poorer and need to do some better work really on their finances, to be blunt. Absolutely.
Yeah, Paul, I think we can see it. You know, I hate to use examples, but, you know, the likes of Counties Manukau, I know financially they were struggling, and also the Manawatu Turbos. And unfortunately, it absolutely shows in their results. They've, you know, to lose somebody like Otere Black this year to a union who's obviously well organised and Bay of Plenty, you can't take anything away from what they're doing. They're seeing the bigger picture. I do wonder, before we go, and here's, I don't know whether this is a holistic question, if the rugby union if they look upon the Mitre 10 and Cup as a real financial problem for them, is it maybe some other organisation takes over the Mitre 10 Cup? Somebody other than the New Zealand Rugby Football Union. Maybe the Mitre 10 Cup unions form their own organisation.
Potentially, I mean, that's how you see things placed at the team competitions like the Gallagher Premiership have their own organisation. They're not run by the RFU. They have agreements with the RFU, but they run their own competition their way. We could see that. The problem is that how much of how much money would they get from the New Zealand Rugby? And obviously, that currently they provide money to the to the provinces. They also pay the wages of the Super Rugby players. So would they get released for free to these sort of things? So those pieces would have to be agreed. And you could say, look, that actually the provinces could demand money from the New Zealand Rugby for developing these players for them, which is basically how the Gallagher Premiership kind of works. So we'll have to wait and see. Maybe it is time for the provinces to have control of this, because it's clearly not a primary concern or a primary focus for New Zealand Rugby to promote Mitre 10 Cup or the Farrah Palmer Cup for that matter. maybe it is time for someone like Tony Flett, the sort of the more progressive CEOs, people like Tony Lewis, who has left now the Tasman, or Mike Rogers at Bay of Plenty, who we've talked about giving those guys more control of the competition, saying, hey, guys, look, you've turned your provinces around. What could you do with the actual national competition? That would be interesting to see.
Well, I think private equity and professional event managers and promoters. I'll give you a really good example. The NRL Nines, the Auckland Nines, and also the Gold Coast Tens, which was the preview a couple of seasons ago to the Super Rugby, was handled and promoted by Duco Events. Now, Duco Events are the current promoter of Joseph Parker. And, you know, they had a very successful run in it because that's what they do. They are professionals at putting together events. So maybe that's an avenue. Now, of course, that was just a weekend of rugby, a festival of rugby. How feasible and how practical it is for a ongoing season, that remains to be seen. But again, looking at options, you know, outside the traditional box will probably give some interesting answers.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things to keep an eye on is the World Tens series that's being put together. I'm not sure I've got the right name. They had their first tournament in the Caribbean. That from what I've heard, all the players enjoyed being part of. I don't know how successful it was cash wise for the promoters. But they're taking a long-term view of it. Get some advice off Peter Fernandez for the domestic competition. Get in an NRL lead guy to come and run the minor 10. That'll be an interesting one, for certain. Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure. As always, any sort of final points before I wrap things up?
No, not at all, Paul. I hope everybody survived this festive season and came out the other side all good. And, you know, with what's happening around the world with regards to COVID, boy, it just makes you so thankful where we are at the moment. And even more so, Paul, we still get to talk about the game we love the most. And, man, that's Super Rugby season. What are we talking here? We're only talking about 8 weeks away, aren't we?
Yep. 7 weeks from the Super Rugby AU or Super Rugby Gold. 8 weeks from the Super Rugby Aotearoa. So, yes, it's not that far away.
Excuse that noise in the background. This is West Auckland, where somebody thinks it's a good idea to have their speakers on the outside of a car as opposed to inside.
I mean, it's cultural, Stephen.
Gents, one incident, especially, this one's for the viewers. I don't know if any gentlemen watched any of the Gallagher Premiership from last week. I think it was Gloucester and Sale Sharks. Very interesting game. Yes. Of course, behind closed doors, right at the end, Billy 12 Trees tries to grab the ball off the water boy, who was obviously trying to hang on to the ball because that would have then prevented a quick throw. Causes an all-in brawl. And I have to say, as a coach, I should be advocating this sort of thing. But it was a breath of refreshing air because, you know, rugby in that part of the world this time of the year is very boring. And I have to say, all of a sudden, I woke up from watching the game and I started paying attention. And unfortunately, it was the 80th minute. And even despite having no crowds, no pressure on the referees and the TMOs, the blundering just continues on and on and on. Social, and there's a couple of shoulder charges. In fact, the referee completely missed it. The TMO missed it. And the fast continued. The player had to go for an HIA. And now, due to heavy social media and media pressure, they've decided to have a citation inquiry. So I'll be very interested to see what comes out of that. There you go. I had to have a crack at the referees.
He got it in there just at the end, folks. Thank you very much, Bella. Thank you very much, Stephen. It's been a pleasure, as absolutely always. We will be back next Tuesday with the Driving Mall Show. An interesting comment in the chat there from Batman saying that some Sevens is broken. We need a restart. maybe we'll have a chat about how can we structure Sevens to make it actually sustainable. Because at the moment, I don't yet. Clearly, it is not a sustainable product, but it is a wonderful one to go watch. So perhaps we'll have a chat about that next week, how to make Sevens a sustainable product. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful week. Support.